Hello, and welcome to the Indian American Experience podcast. I'm your host, Bindiya Parikh. Indian Americans are a group that defies being painted in one stroke, be it in political or ideological leanings, definition of identity, or perception of their place in society. So join me in listening to the journeys and experiences of a diverse group of Indian Americans, or Desis, through lighthearted, casual conversations and see if we can find common threads, maybe shed some myths, and hear some interesting stories. Let's get started. My guest today is Tejal Kharia. Tejal moved from India with her family when she was about 7. She's married with a daughter and has had a long and illustrious career in finance, tax, and treasury, and is currently head of global risk management at Catalent Pharmaceuticals. In her spare time, Tejal enjoys gardening, pickleball, and is a voracious reader. I think the first conversation I ever had with Tejal was over books that we were reading then. Hi, Tejal, and welcome.
Thank you, and hello.
That's an impressive resume. But before we begin talking about your career, success, and other such things, are you reading anything interesting currently?
As a matter of fact, I just finished Lessons in Chemistry, which I enjoyed immensely. Very, very funny, very endearing, recommended to everybody, including you, of course. Actually, you're the one that recommended it to me initially. So thank you for that.
Great. Oh, cool. I don't think I finished it yet. So good for you.
So I just, I put that down not too long ago, and I resumed reading a book I'd started some months ago, The Song of the Cell by Siddharth Mukherjee. And it's, yeah, so that's a very interesting book, slightly dense, but he's got an amazing talent for making dense topics very understandable to the layperson. So I'm very much interested in continuing reading that. And so I'm back on that right now.
Oh, great. That's very much on my list. I really want to start reading it, and I'm looking forward to that. Nice. So let's get a little bit into your personal journey, if we may. You were very young when you came here. Where in India did your family move from?
Ahmedabad, Gujarat.
Okay. And what was the reason that your parents decided to move to this country?
You know, that's a great question. And I'm not sure I know the specific reason. You know, if my dad were still around, yeah, I'd love to ask him and have a long conversation about that. But I think just generally from what I do know, America presented itself as a land of immense opportunity. You know, this is back in the late 60s. My dad ultimately came here in 1970. And so I imagine that was the primary driver for doing that. He came from a family that encouraged, you know, exploring the world. And many of his cousins were studied here and here as well as Europe. So traveling abroad to study and maybe even to settle was not necessarily all that unusual in his family.
I see. Where did you come here when you came?
To New Jersey. So my mom and dad, my dad came in 1970. My mom joined him about 6 months later. They were in New York City at the time. And then, you know, once they decided that they were ready to have me and my sister come as well, they decided to move to the suburbs. And so they moved to New Jersey. And by that time, you know, they were settled, a little bit more settled anyway. And my sister and I came here in 1973.
So when you recall your childhood, the culture at home, was that, would you say, fairly traditional, a traditional Indian culture? And we'll get into defining that a little bit later. But was it fairly similar to the traditional Indian values that your parents may have grown up with, or their idea of bringing up children? Was that more based on the culture that they grew up in India?
Yeah, I think in many ways it was more traditional. You know, they were, in certain aspects, they were very contemporary in their way of thinking, very progressive, you know, with things like assimilating. You know, they encouraged us to, you know, try American foods, you know, non-veg as well as veg, of course. So they wanted us to, you know, to become and embrace the American way of life. But at home, we were still expected to, you know, abide by sort of the traditional way of living, you know, and that was no dating and you know, making sure that they knew where we were at all times, they wanted to meet our friends, and just generally in that sense, a bit more strict, if you will, yeah, as compared to perhaps, you know, an American family life at that time.
Yeah, raising my kids now, later here, I do sometimes wonder that what we define as Indian values, are they uniquely Indian or are they not? But I totally see what you said as being very much traditional Indian values. What else comes to mind when you try to break down what the culture and the values were as you were raised by your Indian parents that came from India?
Yeah, I mean, you know, aside from, you know, the food and the holidays and, you know, cultural celebrations, I think, you know, which is fairly common to all Indians, right, across the spectrum, with differences based on their geographic background. But I think the one thing that does stick to my mind is it came from a family, again, that was very strict. There was a lot of, we were brought up to have a lot of respect for elders and authority. And that has definitely had an impact on me, certainly, you know, in, you know, personally growing up and then also professionally. And I remember, like, if I did something I wasn't allowed to do and somehow stepped out of line, you know, I wasn't scared of my mom because she would just say, oh, you just wait home till until Papa comes home. And when he finds out, you're going to be in trouble. And I was really scared of that. And therefore, I would, you know, hope that that evening he was working late. But I also remember similarly growing up in India, because, you know, I lived there until I was seven. There was an incredible difference in authority for both grandfathers on both sides of the family. And my mom's side of the family is very large. So all us grandkids would be terrified of our grandfather. And that threat was always looming if anybody stepped out of line, you know. You're going to be called into, you know, granddad's room, and then you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So that emphasis on patriarchal authority, you know, definitely had an impact on me, and even, you know, carried on into some of my, you know, professional experiences. I would always have tremendous respect for my superiors in any person that had a position of authority. And I remember having a lot of hesitancy, you know, early in my career, especially speaking up when I didn't agree entirely with somebody who was my superior. And my thinking was always, oh, well, they're older than me, number one, and they have way more experience than me. And so they definitely must know a lot more. And, you know, I, whatever I'm thinking has got to be wrong. And it took a while to sort of dispel that. Of course, they are right most of the time, probably. But there are times when, you know, maybe they're not right. And one incident comes to my mind, if I can relay that to you. I was working for a company, Union Camp, long since been acquired. And we were in a meeting. I was a lowly senior analyst. So it was me, my boss, who's the manager, the director of tax, and then the VP of tax and treasurer. So it was the four of us. Again, lowest person on a total poll was me. And we were all talking. The subject of the conversation was this, how to harness the value of this particular tax attribute. And I won't bore you with all the tax details, but it seemed like, you know, it was very difficult to do that. And the group, they were, you know, reaching the conclusion that we would just not be able to utilize that value or release that value. And we would just have to give up on that asset. And I was sitting there thinking and to myself, like, why don't we just do this? It was, you know, let's, you know, XYZ kind of transaction to release that value. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm sure I'm missing something, you know, otherwise they would have thought of it. And for a long time, I sat there and didn't say anything because I was just too, you know, too scared to defy, you know, their conclusions. So my manager was sitting next to me. I felt most comfortable with him out of the lot. So I leaned over and I whispered and I said, hey, what if we did this?
Yeah.
So he looked at me and he nodded. And then he related to, you know, to the others. And then, you know, he asked me to elaborate. And they looked at me and said, yeah, that works. That's a great idea. So, you know, that's just one example that I think, you know, growing up in that society where there's a lot of emphasis on patriarchal authority can in some ways, you know, hold some people back, maybe not everyone, but, you know, I certainly felt that. You know, contrast that with the way we raise our kids now here, and maybe some families back then too, is, you know, we want to make sure our kids, especially our girls, grow up with a lot of confidence, are learn to be assertive, advocate for themselves fully, and certainly not be shy or hesitant to voice their opinion, right? Things were much different back then.
And if you think about it, on the flip side of it, having your traditional Indian upbringing, could you break it down to a couple of attributes of your the values that you were brought up with that helped you in your career path, that helped you do well, that helped you perform your best and grow?
Yeah, you know, I think a couple of things that were instilled in me that really, I think, helped me professionally is to work hard, of course, you know, have a strong work ethic and, you know, live up to your commitments, right? If you're committed to doing something, it's your responsibility in fulfilling that commitment instead of and making sure that you don't disappoint the person that you made that commitment to. And then in addition to that, you know, it's maybe at the risk of being a little, an obvious one is integrity, right? Always do things with integrity so that there's no reason to defend yourself if you do things with integrity. And then lastly, I'll say, have a sufficient amount of humility, right, in your work and what you do and how you conduct yourself. Because at the end of the day, nobody's right. Nobody's perfect. There are going to be times when we're right. There are going to be times when we're wrong. And having a healthy dose of humility will always keep you balanced and help you keep both feet on the ground. So I think those are some of the values that I took from my parents growing up and that I've always carried with me and passed on to my daughter as well.
That's wonderful. And I do think you live it. But if we dwelled a little bit on this, are those family values, are those traditional Indian values? It's all mixed in together, right? Because if I were to ask you to define what's quintessentially an Indian value, what's quintessentially Indian culture, to put it very loosely, that's a tough question. And it doesn't have an answer because there is no one set of values that is uniquely Indian. And even I think you may have alluded to that. It also varies depending on where you grew up in India. And also, doesn't it ultimately come down to the family values?
Absolutely. You're 100% right. Yeah. I mean, you know, when it comes to values, you're really talking about values, whether they're Indian, American, or any ethnicity for that matter. Values are values, and they vary from family to family and from person to person.
Right. But then having said that, the family is a microcosm of the culture that's around you. So it does tie together. And that's beautiful. If I were to ask you to comment on what you see as the stereotype of Indian Americans in this country now, again, we touched upon the diversity that we have among us, but there is stereotyping of a minority community. And what do you view it as it exists right now?
Yeah, that's great. And I'm going to take one step back to your previous question, and then because it ties into my answer for this question. You know, if I had to name one thing that could be called or come close to being called a predominantly Indian value, is maybe emphasis on education. I think, you know, most families, certainly most Indian American families, will place a great amount of value on education. So with that as a backdrop, when it comes to Indian stereotypes, I think one stereotype that exists is this implied credibility that Indians have in the assumption that stands behind that is, oh, if you're Indian, you must be smart and hardworking, you know, that kind of a thing. So that brings this implied credibility, for example, when you're applying for a job or when you're entering a business meeting or speaking to somebody for the first time and they find that out. I would guess that many people will attribute that implied credibility to that person. And where does that come from? I guess, when you look at the immigrants or the people, the Indians that have immigrated here to the U.S., you know, you had that first group back in the 60s that came under a very narrow immigration policy, right? So that was, immigration was only open to professionals and certain professionals only. So, you know, you naturally got only educated people at that time. the second wave was, of course, more broader. And then, you know, you had people who were maybe not necessarily professionals or had a high education. And these were business people and small business owners, et cetera. And then the third big wave, of course, was the wave that brought people of IT expertise, particularly from India, right? But when you combine, especially that first wave and that third wave together, you know, you have what's a highly educated, professional Indian American group, many of whom have reached incredible amounts of success here. But like any other group, we are a diverse bunch, and not everybody sort of falls into that stereotype. But if I had to pick a stereotype, I think that would be the one that comes to my mind.
I see that. I agree with that. Just to zoom out a little bit, now that you're sitting, reflecting on life in general, in your philosophy on how to live your best life, what do you give the most importance to?
I would place the greatest amount of importance to achieving that certain balance in your life. And of course, you know, that's different for everybody, right? But I think when it comes to not living your best life, having maybe the fewest regrets, right? I think if you spend a disproportionately high amount of time in a certain aspect of your life, it can only be done at the sacrifice of something else. And that might be the right balance for a particular person, but perhaps, you know, not for everybody. And so making sure that while you're, you know, trying to pursue a successful career, you've got enough time to devote to your, you know, to your spouse, to your kids, to, you know, other members of your family, and also to personal pursuits, right? To carving out time for yourself to pursue an activity, I think is critical for well-being. And, you know, the happier you are or the more balance you've achieved. And again, I can't emphasize enough that amount of balance or where on the spectrum, you know, is obviously going to be different for different people. But, you know, you'll know where your happy place is on that spectrum once you get there or as you're close to getting there. And the more balanced you are, I think the more successful you'll be at all those aspects of your life.
Yeah, well said. That's an elusive balance, right? We're all...
Yes. Certainly it is.
Switching gears a little bit, you have one adult daughter and you grew up here and then you raised your daughter here. Have you ever reflected on how that's been different and in what way do you perceive all of that?
Yeah, you know, having grown up here, I remember thinking before I was married that my kids, when I had kids at the time, right, are going to be even further removed, less connected to, you know, to Indian culture, everything Indian. And because, you know, I myself becoming so much more westernized, Americanized, you know. But then interestingly, two things happened that I think, you know, not only halted that, but maybe even reversed that to a certain extent. One is I got married and my husband he grew up in India. He came here for college and then he's been here since then. But he grew up in India, unlike me. And he's very much interested in Indian arts, you know, it's Indian music, especially Indian classical music, you know, Indian language, Hindi, Urdu, you know, even some poetry, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So marrying him all of a sudden opened the door to this part of Indian culture that I really had not, you know, been exposed to here before, having grown up here. And then when we had our daughter, given the way more Indians, many more Indians living here than at the time I grew up, she naturally, organically became exposed to more Indian culture. She has some very close Indian friends, and even her American friends are increasingly become more interested in things Indian, Indian movies, Indian food, you know, all of that stuff, going to Indian weddings, you know, things like that. So I marvel at how different things ended up for her in terms of exposure to Indian culture than I thought they would when I was younger. So it's great, you know, it's great to see that. It's great to have her enjoy all of it. The American culture, which she very much enjoys, the Indian culture, and some blending of the two at the end of the day, which is, you know, exactly what's happening now.
Yeah. And at some level, what we see, what we call American culture, is evolving itself. And it's very much, the country is very much a melting pot. But some of what people bring into the country has become a part of what we could call American culture. So it's all, it has evolved. And that's actually a beautiful thing that happened.
Yes. Sorry, if I could just say one more thing about that. What is happening here, maybe, you know, tell me what you think, is what has happened to India historically, right? India is this diverse group of people, and it's become diverse because of all the historical influxes of different peoples, whether it was Persia, now Iran, or people from the north, or the invasions by Alexander the Great, and then, of course, the influence of Great Britain and India, Portuguese, who formed the first colony, the Dutch, you know, all of those invaders, visitors, immigrants have created the incredible diversity, which is India today, right? So when we think of India, you know, as you mentioned earlier, right, you know, people from different parts of India can be extremely unlike each other in terms of the food they eat, the language they speak, even their local cultural traditions, etc. And maybe if we fast forward, I don't know how many years, 50, 100 years, maybe a little bit more, we might see a little bit of that here in America.
That's fascinating. Thank you so much, Tejal. This was wonderful. And I feel like we just scratched the surface on so many things. But thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Tejal. Through your reflections and amazing insights, you were able to portray so well the complex experience that it is being an Indian American and the challenge it is to live a meaningful life while balancing all our influences. And you have inspired me to think deeper about the values and principles I uphold as important to me. Thanks again. And I'll be back next week with another wonderful representative of our Indian American community.